Hello, this is Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is a Making It Grow Extra radio broadcast. And with me today is a person whom everybody who watches Making It Grow knows very well, Teresa Lott, who is, of course, the person who's with us every single Tuesday doing the more modern things than I do. And Teresa, you're doing something kind of modern at your own house and landscape, I think.
Indeed.
And let's talk a little bit about what it is that you're changing around outdoors.
I would be happy to share that. I will have to say that it's mostly my ideas and my husband's labor that is making this happen. We're sort of rethinking about how we manage our landscape. And when I say how we manage, moving away from so much turf grass and swapping it out for something that is more habitat friendly.
Y'all moved into a relatively new house a couple of years ago, I guess. And was there, had the, most of the landscape been done before you got there?
Done. You could say that. Everything had been cleared at one time. I believe it was old farmland. So the only existing plantings were some foundation plantings, not very much of anything at all. And in fact, we completely redid what was there, which was a vast expanse of turf grass.
Oh.
Yes. And so a lot of time is spent mowing and troubleshooting problems because, you know, turf can be pretty finicky. It wants to be mowed at a certain height and it wants a certain amount of water, and then we have pests and diseases. So it's a lot of work. And there's not a lot of benefits in terms of wildlife habitat, except perhaps pest things, right? The spittle bugs and all the things that you don't want. We had army worms last year on
no.
the turf grass.
Whoa.
Yes. So, you know, turf grass has a place, and I don't want people to think that we can't use it. It's great for areas that are going to be used. You know, we have dogs at my house, three of my own, and a revolving door of foster dogs. They need a place, and I hope that's not in my flower beds. If you have kids, turf grass is great for them to kick the ball, throw the frisbee. Maybe you need a space for entertaining. But what I'd like to see is that we shift our focus from defaulting to turf and change that to where we sort of only place turf strategically.
And one thing, too, people are proud of their homes and they want people to see them. But if you just see a green front yard of grass, I'm not inclined to slow down. If people have some foundation plantings and there are gaps in the so-called fence, then I want to kind of slow down and peek around the corner and see what's there. So I think really people are more intrigued with a little mystery, which is more likely to happen if the entire front of your yard isn't just one space of grass.
Absolutely. It can pique your interest, and I think you can really add to the aesthetics of your landscape by that strategically placed trees, shrubs, flowers, and it needs to be a mix of all those things. Now, don't ask me for any advice when it comes to landscape design because I don't have that.
And, Teresa, some people I've seen actually trying to run a lawnmower up and down slopes, and that's actually just dangerous. And as a former water quality agent, I know that on a slope, the rain would go down more quickly. And so if you replace that with a hedge, I mean, not a hedge, but a group of plantings that was mulched, wouldn't that do a better job slowing down the water and allowing any impurities to be filtered down into the ground rather than going into the waterways?
It definitely would. So turf grass is better than bare soil, certainly. But if we have things that have deeper root systems, that's going to be better for holding that soil in place and hopefully slowing down the water, allowing for it to soak in. Even when it comes to ditches, right? People like to use herbicides in ditches, but that's really counterproductive because we want that vegetation to slow the water down, allow it to sink in, filter out some of the things that might be in that water. And also just the function of the ditch from a flooding perspective, if we take out all the vegetation, it sedimentation happens, right? It clogs up the ditch and then it doesn't work at all.
Then doesn't do what it was designed to do.
Exactly.
And, you know, when we think about in South Carolina how fortunate we are, we have, you know, a wonderful system of lakes. You know, we have Lake Murray, we have the Santee Cooper Lakes, we have Lake Thurman, and ponds and things, and it's plenty warm to swim, at least not, probably 9 months of the year, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And so I think, the you know, and we like to fish, and I think the more we can think of our yard as part of a filtration system that can help protect and keep those waterways cleaner is another wonderful aspect.
Yes, there's something we all can do, whether we happen to have waterfront property or if you're like me and don't have any water close by. There's something that each one of us can do to sort of play a larger role in the world that we live in, right? We're just one species connected to many others that call this planet home.
Well, what are some of the things that you've done at your place?
We took out about 625 square feet of turf grass and replaced that. That's three separate areas. Two of them have been replanted with transplants that are attractive to pollinators and other beneficial insects.
So you mean like herbaceous perennials and things
yes.
like that? Okay.
Yes. We do have a few shrubs, but mostly focusing on those herbaceous
right.
perennials. Mm-hmm. And perennials because we like things that are going to come back year to year, so that's less maintenance in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And then there's one area that I think was a seed mix?
It was. So it doesn't matter what aesthetic you're going for in your yard, you can find something that works for you. Perhaps transplants if you want a more manicured, mm-hmm. neat and tidy look.
Okay.
A wildflower mix is going to be great if you like that natural look. In fact, the Xerces Society says that wildflower-rich habitat is the single most important thing you or I can do to support pollinators in the landscape.
Really?
Yeah.
Say that for me once more.
So the Xerces Society says the single most important thing you can do to support pollinators in your landscape is to provide wildflower-rich habitat.
Wow, that is something. And how big an area did y'all do the seed mix in, Teresa?
Oh, goodness. I knew you'd ask me that. I'd say it's probably about 20 feet long and 5 feet wide, maybe.
Oh, okay.
It's not really a large
yeah,
area.
Uh-huh.
We weren't sure how it would look. We weren't
yes.
sure how well the seeds would germinate, so we figured we would start small. You know, no matter what landscaping project you're tackling, it's really important to start small. Because if you have success, then that's that catalyst that will drive forward. But if you start big and have failure, then you're less likely to try to do something again.
And so that's really not a very large space, but you told me that when you walk out there, kind of sounds like there's a machine going.
It really does. It's alive. I was standing out there this morning, and you just close your eyes, and you can hear bzzz. Obviously, you don't really hear the butterflies. They don't really make a sound, but all kinds of different bees, bumblebees, honeybees, little bees, big bees, so many insects teeming out there. It just makes my heart happy. That's what I really enjoy about gardening is watching the insects and other wildlife, the birds that come and benefit from the landscape. And, you know, this wildflower mix, there are tons to choose from. So something that fits every need. We chose one that was pretty diverse, 25 different species of plants.
Wow.
Some are annuals,
mm-hmm.
some are perennials. So designed to give you that burst of color this first
sure.
season, but then have things that come back year after year. And a lot of the annuals are prone to reseeding. So
yes.
I expect that we'll see some of those
mm-hmm.
as well. But diversity in terms of flower colors, shapes, blooming times. So we want to have things that bloom, you know, spring, early summer, late summer, through the fall. Diversity really is the key because the insects are diverse, right? We have things that have long mouth parts that like larger tubular flowers, and we have things with short mouth parts that want to be able to kind of walk on the flowers. So diversity really is the key. But if you don't like the wild look, you can get seed mixes that maybe just have two species, so that might be a little easier
okay.
on your eye. Uh-huh. There are even ones that are made to be below a certain height, so perhaps
mm-hmm.
you can get around any HOA
oh,
or mowing ordinances
uh-huh. yes.
and restrictions.
Mm-hmm. And then also in the choice of things that can be larval food plants, there are herbaceous plants, herbaceous perennials that serve that purpose, particularly like milkweeds. We all know about
yes,
those.
Yes, and I have milkweed growing in one of those more traditionally landscaped areas with the transplants. So unfortunately, I haven't seen any monarchs yet this year, but it doesn't mean the plants aren't being used. I still see bees and other butterflies. They're using it as a nectar source.
But also, there are small trees and larger trees, so even when you just make those sorts of choices, so if you're going to take away turf grass, and sometimes people have turf grass under trees and it's not doing very well. So you could choose trees that would also serve as a larval food host, couldn't you?
You could, definitely. So kind of the moral of the story whenever we're choosing plants is to try to choose natives whenever possible. It doesn't mean your yard has to be exclusively native, but native plants do tend to support more beneficial insects than our non-natives do.
And people often think of bees, but it's not just bees.
It's not bees. Although you could think of the three bees as in birds, bugs, and butterflies.
Yes.
And bats, too.
Yes,
I guess we
true.
Can make that four yeah. bees. But when we say bugs, we mean a variety of insects. So the different types of flies and bees and wasps and beetles even are pollinators.
And when you mentioned birds, and one of the important things is that birds have a very deep and necessary connection with the insect diversity in your yard, don't they?
They do. So sometimes people think of birds in the perspective of only visiting bird feeders where mm-hmm. they get seeds. But even those that eat seeds rely primarily on insects to feed their young, more specifically caterpillars. And the number of caterpillars they need is incredible. There was a study about chickadees and how many they need just to raise one brood of young. And it's in the hundreds per day. And I believe the chicks spend about 14 days in the nest. And then mom Ooh. And dad actually feed them for a number of days after they have left the nest, a little harder to study because they're not in that one confined place. So we need those caterpillars to be able to support our bird populations.
And the farther the birds have to go to search for those, because we have changed the plant community so dramatically, the harder it is for them to raise these young.
That's right.
And as you say, natives are our best bet. You don't have to have all natives, though. And we are not saying don't have turf grass because everybody needs a slip and slide and and a place to go out and hit a golf ball.
That's right. I'm not throwing turf under the bus. Just kind of rethink, strategically place it where you need it and consider other alternatives where you don't. And I think you'll find that not only do you create this rich haven for birds and butterflies and bees, but also for yourself. We put a hammock in one of these areas and it's been too hot really to enjoy it, but I can't wait to just go out there and observe with my eyes and listen with my ears and think, wow, I've really made a difference.
And you know, we can make a difference. There's so many problems that seem beyond our scope, but this is one where, and I think you heard Doug telling me recently, and he said that the famous entomologist who wrote Bringing Nature Home,
mm-hmm.
is that correct?
I did.
And he said that we could make a national park that went from the Atlantic to the Pacific Ocean, just if homeowners would decide to change, as you've done, a small portion of their landscape. I want to commend you for what you've done and for all the great ideas you share with us, Teresa.
Thanks, Amanda. It's my pleasure.